It's Tuesday, August 13th. We're dying. We're quarantined. Chris is not allowed to be around us.
Actually, Chris is off on her honeymoon in a secret location that we won't tell you, just in case you're creeps. Yeah. See, the big wedding was over the weekend. It was a glorious affair. I gotta say, wedding was pretty normie, except the musical selections.
It's all Lord of the Rings.
Which I didn't get at all. One of them, I don't know what it was.
Yeah, one of them was not Lord of the Rings, but I don't know what it was 8-bit. I don't know.
Yeah, that was a weird one. Being the, you know, Aspies that we are, we bailed out before the dancing, so I don't know what the first dance was. But I'll be interested to learn that. In the meantime, the news must continue. And
even though we're dying, we're doing this, and it's probably going to be a little short. And it's also summer, so there's not really a lot of news.
Also, terrible time to have an outdoor wedding. Pro tip, if you're thinking about doing that, I wouldn't. It's unpleasant.
Especially not facing the sun. Maybe facing away from the sun would be a good idea.
I'm sure that's good for the photography. Well, let's talk about everybody's favorite way to start the 11-1 news. It's a tradition, Mr. Ajit Pai.
Uh-oh, Ajit Pai has lost another court case as the judges overturn 5G deregulation. Now, this has to do with the ability for small towns and municipalities and special interest groups that own land to charge fees for reviewing applications and things like that to put in a tower. So, like, a good-sized tower. Well, it affects, I guess, the small towers, too.
But yes, the 5G.
Native Americans are also complaining about, you know, it's like, hey, we need oversight and regulation if anybody's going to try to install a large tower on one of our nature preserves.
It's cultural or environmental. So you got some endangered turtles, perhaps a burial mound of some type, then maybe you're not going to be able to put a 5G node there.
Without some review.
Well, yeah, I think they can turn you down. And that's probably what scared them most.
Yeah.
And that's probably why they, you know, let loose the pie on them. And I think he was hoping to just sort of sneak this one through. Didn't happen.
Is it weird how he's constantly like, no, Congress doesn't give us the authority to do this. But then in other cases like this, he's like, no, we absolutely have the authority to do this. The judges are like, what are you doing?
I mean, he is persistent on wanting to undo authority. Although, you're foreshadowing. Because I don't know what order we did them in. Oh,
yeah,
we did perfectly order them for that. Because he is... Well, I don't know if he is directly involved here. I imagine he's probably, you know, in some talks, right?
It's like, wait, what?
Because it's actually Mr. Trump, another staple of beginning of the 11-1 news. It's funny how such a non-technical man always manages to be at the forefront.
He's just stomping around IT groups.
But he's made a terrifying decision when it comes to the FCC.
The White House proposal would have the FCC and the FTC police alleged social media censorship. And this is one of the hardest to research stories for this episode of the news, because all of the different places covering this say that it says a different thing. And it could actually be the most horrible thing ever, or it could be just a power, like, it's a blatant power grab, no matter which way you cut the cheese. But it could be the most horrible thing ever, or it could be just, I don't know. It's they want to roll back the safe harbor protections if an online platform meddles with the content. And so what they're talking about is like Twitter. And so like if you go on Twitter and like you're a Nazi and they shut you down for being a Nazi, that maybe you would lose your safe harbor provisions. At least that's what one group is saying this says. But it could also be that if the platform takes the time to try to censor or shape content, that you lose your safe harbor protections, meaning that the platform is responsible for the message that's being said. So it's really hard to suss out what's going on here other than power grab.
Well, it's obvious, I think, that both sides are trying to play every card they have in the dirtiest way possible. It is absolutely true that the big tech companies have a left bias, in my opinion. I mean, there's no escaping it.
It seems likely.
And
that's why they're freaking out about this, right?
And the social media section, which is also in this episode. Today's episode's weird because we have a lot of sections. We'll see that with the whole McConnell thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's blatant. And yet, Trump and McConnell are so hated that some people see that as a good thing. And then in this situation, Trump sees it as a good thing to be able to sick the regulators on there. But then everybody has this short-sighted vision, and they're not thinking about down the road when it flip-flops. Right? And the left gets into power, and the right becomes the voice of dissent on the technological side, if that ever happens. And then they're just fighting a losing war, because then the other side has the guns that you made.
It seems to me, so I think that there are aspects to this that are even more nuanced than that, but it seems like to me that some of these technical companies have decided that, by and large, the rest of the population is too stupid to have their own opinion. And so it's like, no, you must think what we want you to think. And it's like, well, no, what if I don't agree with what, like, I understand what you're saying, I just don't agree with the conclusion that you've come to. It's like, no, obviously then, you're too stupid.
Then you're a fascist.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, that seems problematic.
But see, what you've described has been the attitude of the government always. Right? These idiots are too stupid. We have to make these rules so they live their lives the way we want them to, the way they should. And, you know, they're just not smart enough to govern themselves, right?
It's really terrifying.
So really you have two giant levels of hubris butting heads. And one of them has the power of this, you know, like artificial government structure, and one of them has the power of commerce. And it's like, who wins, right?
As someone who thinks of themselves as kind of a reasonable opinion, I'm sitting here looking at this, and it really is like two incredibly stubborn billy goats just going at one another. And it's like, has all reasonableness just completely left the room? Because this seems like they're both trying to use technology as a blunt instrument.
But meanwhile, just gutting the Constitution as they go to try and undermine one another. So it's the worst timeline. And I don't see it getting any better. And I don't see this being a positive effect either way if Trump gets his way with the thing.
Sorry.
So that's not the only really stupid thing that Trump said this week when it came to technology. Was it the stupidest? I rank it a little higher than this one, even though this one is quite a doozy in itself.
Trump calls for social media companies to detect mass shooters before they strike. Okay.
How could they do that, do you think? What would be required there?
While we're at it, could they also do, like, detect meteors? Because, like, we've had some near misses from meteors lately.
We've had more shootings than meteors, admittedly. But you think to yourself, the only way you could do something like this is to monitor everything, right?
Yeah.
So we're back to that?
I mean, I don't think that monitoring everything would actually accomplish this.
Well, just like it didn't stop the terrorist attacks.
No.
But have you noticed the big push is to label these latest shootings as domestic terror? Because then we can apply all of those legal changes that we made with the Patriot Act and all that.
Oh,
because
they were terrorists.
To our own citizens.
But they weren't terrorists.
Oh, that's fascist talk.
I like how the meaning of words constantly changes. Wasn't there a philosopher that was like, right before a society collapses, they cease to be able to communicate because the meaning of words shifts constantly? That was a thing.
Well, I mean, Nazi has lost all meaning, right? Because
and fascism.
It's so widely used, it's ridiculous. But yeah, there is no way to do this. Even if they could listen to everything like the NSA tried to do, they're not good at parsing it. So
can you imagine if you're caught up in one of these things? It's like, you know, you're posting online. It's like, look at this, you know, look at my amazing, you know, 47 in a row frag quest thing. And then all of a sudden I have to go before the authorities to explain that. No, what did you mean? It's like, no, I just really like playing Quake. You're going to be a terrorist. It's like, no, I like playing Quake.
Well, we're already kind of getting that kind of thing.
That's crazy.
I mean, especially with the, you know, the blame video game.
The signal to noise ratio here is off the charts in a bad way.
I've got a great way to solve the shooting thing, but I won't go into it because it would just piss people off. All right. Facial recognition when it comes to Facebook. They had the thing about it is facial recognition, when you post things onto Facebook, you get tagged automatically, right? It learns who you are. It sees you in pictures, and it's like, oh, hey, someone uploaded a picture of you. Let me tag you. Well, in, was it Illinois or Indiana? I think it's Illinois, right?
Oh, yeah.
That is illegal. Yeah, boy, yeah. Boy. Facial recognition in Illinois. So if somebody tried to sue them, Facebook said, no, no, no. Let's throw this out as a class action. Let's not do that. Well,
turns out, yeah, it's a judge has ruled that it can proceed. Wah, wah.
A San Francisco judge, which is weird that San Francisco?
I think San Francisco and Illinois are aligned on that. Didn't we do a story about 20 different things in California doing stuff?
Well, they're definitely anti facial recognition. So they're saying that, not necessarily that what Facebook did is they're not ruling that it's wrong or anything. They're just saying that this can be a class action lawsuit from all the people of Illinois who were tagged on Facebook, which is everybody who uses it. And that this story, or this lawsuit, this class action lawsuit, can go forward. Which is bad news for Facebook, because that could be another $1 billion fine.
I think that's bad news for Facebook, not just for this lawsuit, but the potential of many other lawsuits. Because now also, like Cambridge. Cambridge was another area that's not supposed to do facial recognition anymore. And this would probably count, so.
Yeah, they'd have to turn that off altogether. Which is probably super useful for the ad engine.
This story was like...
we've been following this story for a while. So we talked about... I think it was while you were gone, we talked about how every Ring camera that the cops can talk people into buying with their like special promo code, they get kickbacks at their the precinct. And they also basically give themselves a way to monitor those citizens for free.
Yeah.
But there's a catch. As a citizen, just because the cop came to you and sold you a camera, essentially, they don't get to look at the footage, you know, without your permission. You have to give them permission. So how do they get that permission? Well,
Amazon is coaching them. Amazon is coaching cops on how to obtain surveillance footage without a warrant. So yeah, it's a if you download the Neighborhoods app, then the police can request access to your Ring and get access to your Ring. But the article goes on to say that Amazon will still, in some cases, warrantlessly grant permission even when a homeowner has denied it.
Not surprising. They uncovered a bunch of emails, and it's great because the other thing that they pointed out in the preview story is that when you're in one of these precincts that signs on with this deal, you have to hire three people. You have to hire, like, a neighborhood liaison, a community manager, and an Amazon liaison for all these Rings. So they leaked some of these emails, and it was like, you know, Captain Carsey or Casey Kearney, you're doing a great job getting these permissions. You got four this week. Way to go. And it's almost like, you know, they're tracking, you know, like you've unlocked a new achievement. So it shows a terrifying bright, happy person just stripping away the freedoms and security of the people. But it is probably fairly useful in catching, like, porch pirates and stuff. So I think some people would gladly make the trade, unfortunately. When I read this headline, I completely missed the second country involved here. I was like, oh, this is more news about Trump and Huawei. Whoa. No, it's not.
China warns India of reverse sanctions if Huawei is blocked. So this is China has told India not to block Huawei from doing business in the country, warning there would be consequences for Indian firms operating in China, sources with knowledge of the matter said. So the old adage goes, crap rolls downhill. Sorry, India. We started this. Our bad.
India is going 5G along with the rest of the world, obviously. And they have a population that is almost exclusively mobile users. They don't have a lot of desktop use in India. They have everybody's on mobile, and everybody loves their mobiles. They had that record-breaking streaming cricket match thing.
Well, the dock thing. So it turns out the little dock things are also super popular there, where you just put your phone in a thing, and then you've got a keyboard for it, and maybe a monitor plugged into your TV or whatever.
They're all playing PUBG Mobile. So it's a big market for Huawei to get into. But India is almost certainly facing pressure from the U.S. And they don't really come out and say it here, but, I mean, what else could it be, right?
Look, if you want to spy on an Indian farmer in, like, rural somewhere, fine. We don't care. Why? Does that mean we get cheaper phones? Sounds good. Sign us up.
So they did sort of... the Indian people were very neutral in their comments in the story. I was like, well, we're not sure yet, but we haven't seen any proof that Huawei's been compromised. So, you know, it could be, I don't know. Which I think is their way of saying, like, you know, you've both got a chance. Convince me to love you. What can I get out of this?
I think also that there are enough technically savvy people in India that they could reasonably audit the Huawei code base and help plug some of the holes if there are holes there.
I'm not sure if Wally wants that.
Yeah.
Turkey. Turkey is not known as a bastion of democracy, despite being in the UN. They've got a pretty poor record when it comes to that kind of thing. This is not a step in the right direction.
Reuters brings us the story that Turkey has moved to oversee all online content, and they're raising concerns over censorship. So the first step here is that the radio and television watchdog group is going to have, you know, sweeping oversight, including Netflix and news outlets and stuff like that. But everybody, of course, was immediately quick to point out, well, wait, what about user-generated content, user-uploaded stuff, things that people are uploading to, like, YouTube and forums and that kind of thing? This would give this authority the ability to trawl through all of that traffic through various ISPs, a la what, you know, Russia is doing, to be able to monitor it, which is bad for, you know, it could mandate backdoor encryption, mandatory backdoor encryption and all the other bad stuff for any content generated in Turkey, which seems bad.
Yeah. And they've also been well known for really keeping their boot on the neck of any sort of burgeoning counter-government.
Yeah.
The Erdogan, or however they pronounce his name, he is not a man who tolerates political opposition very well. So, bad news for them. Chile. I always want to call it Chile, but I'm pretty sure it's Chile, which it's hard for me to say. But not a country we hear about on the tech news very often.
Nope.
And as you might imagine,
the news is bad.
It's a bad reason.
ZDNet brings the headline, voter records for 80% of Chile's population has been left exposed online. Yeah, it's from 2017, so it's from a while back. But yeah, 80% of the population's voting records online.
They have.
They can download.
It's a big list of stuff. Let's see, they've got the list somewhere here. Oh, yeah. Name, home address, gender, age, tax ID for 14 million individuals.
Wow.
Which is essentially every voting age person.
I don't know
Chile.
How to online. That's Chile.
So, yeah, this is a researcher found, you know, just a no password database. Same old story. So, but that is plenty of information to get started on some real good identity theft there.
It's also, you know, I guess the political opposition party knows, you know, who to attack or whatever now, too.
Well, I don't know if they got your recorded vote.
No, it's just that you voted.
All right, moving on to the social media section. Like I said, today's a weird episode because we're doing government, social media, and robots.
Because tomorrow's news is all business.
And it's huge. Anyway, Facebook. So we know that Facebook is facing this new probe because they bought up all these companies to destroy the competition. Because Facebook itself has been in moderate decline. And that's how they've stayed alive. Because if it was still just Facebook, all these other, they would have crushed them by now. So it's interesting in the wake of that. It's like, oh, you're literally under investigation for these things. You should try to distance yourself. What are they doing? No, not that.
Facebook is adding its name to Instagram and WhatsApp to remind you, the plebs, that these apps that you like to use, they're Facebook.
So it's going to be Instagram from Facebook and WhatsApp from Facebook. That really rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? I don't know why you would do this.
They've hired an SEO consultant that's still working in 1996, and they're like, we need to add the from Facebook there to really boost their numbers.
Either that, or they've looked at the numbers based on actual Facebook users and not the bot flood, and they're like, oh, wow, this ship is going down. We need to, you know, spread the brand around as much as possible.
We need to remind regulators and investors alike that this is still Facebook.
And one of Facebook's biggest critics recently, and somebody who's really throwing his name around in the social media world, is Peter Thiel. And he used what some people might refer to as a leftist technocracy mouthpiece, the New York Times. to spread some vitriol about them.
The Gizmodo headline is, New York Times publishes anti-Google rant, doesn't mention the author is a Facebook board member. So not only a Facebook board member, they were actually, they owned a significant stake in Facebook. But I don't know if his name is pronounced Thiel or Thiel, Peter Thiel.
Who cares?
He sold a lot of his ownership in Facebook, but remains a board member. And he is very, his fingers are in a lot of things in Silicon Valley. It's really pretty interesting. Was it Gawker? The Gawker
thing? He
was the
part of that lawsuit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funded Hulk Hogan.
So, interestingly enough, we talked about the New York Times is kind of a, leftist pro all these tech companies, but he is not.
Yeah.
He's a Trump guy. And he's kind of bashing Google for their own policies like that, which is weird.
Yeah, you gotta wonder about this. He's definitely one to keep your eye on, because reasons.
Well, I'm sure we'll have no choice about that.
Your eye will be stapled open, in fact.
Yeah. So Twitter has gotten in a little bit of trouble. We all know that the way these social media companies make money is with targeting ads, right? Of course, Facebook getting in a lot of trouble for that. Google getting in a lot of trouble for that. The EU is just crucifying them, because at the heart of that is spying on you to try to figure out how to advertise to you. And now Twitter getting in trouble for that.
TechCrunch has the article that Twitter has fessed up to more ad tech leaks. So this is to do with actually bugs in the... So it's like, I guess it's okay that Twitter builds the profile on you, but they're not supposed to share that with advertisers. But because of bugs in the platform, it turns out that they are actually sharing the profile with advertisers, which means that advertisers can build a profile on you.
They build the profile. They use the profile to let the advertiser target you. But it's too far to then say, oh, here's why we targeted them for you.
Yeah.
And that's what they accidentally did. So it wasn't even very specific data. I think in some cases it was just which country you're in.
Hmm.
But that's still considered too much. So, not good. And I like how they're apologizing. They're like, oh, we shouldn't have done that. And by that, I mean, let them know what country you were in. All the horrible stuff before that, we're going to keep doing that. That was fine. Now, here's the McConnell story we talked about before. And this story is interesting. And once again, it's just like these giant, horrible entities crashing against one another.
Two really angry goats just... Ugh. Ars Technica has the headline, Twitter backs down and allows McConnell to post a video of protester threats. Twitter has struggled to develop consistent moderation policies. So I watched the video, and it was, they posted video of, I guess, the opposition campaign or whatever.
Well, it's like Antifa and that type of stuff.
And so Twitter was like, no, you're not allowed to post this kind of content. And it's like, well, the context of us posting this is for us to say that it's wrong. And so Twitter's like, nope, that doesn't count.
Well, they doubled down. They banned another account after they, like, argued about it.
Yeah.
A related account. So, but the argument that people ultimately pointed out, and the reason that Twitter backed down, is because some of that same content was posted in a celebratory fashion, saying, yeah, look how we... went after McConnell. We're awesome. And Twitter didn't ban that.
Yeah.
But they banned McConnell's version of it. And of course, McConnell's a monster. And we're here in Kentucky, so we have to be represented by him. But it is still very hypocritical.
Yeah.
What Twitter has done here. So.
But again, it's one of those things where it's like, no, you're not thinking what we want you to think. You have to stop it. And then... It is under, like, the only fix here is to educate the population, like, to actually make them more educated. But that's not easy.
Yeah, good luck with that. And when it comes to hypocrisy in social media, none of these companies stand alone. It's almost like they're competing. And everybody knows at this point, if you don't know, I mean, you're not paying attention, that YouTube also does not enforce its policies across the board. Very selective is YouTube. Not only politically, but when it has to do with the almighty dollar.
Yeah, the Ars Technica article is, YouTube lets biggest stars off the hook for breaking rules, moderators say. This article's great because it's a laundry list of all of the things that they've done wrong, all of the missteps. And a lot of these really huge channels, like the guy that was tasing a dead rat and that found a dead body in the suicide forest and all that kind of stuff, just really, like, no consequences. Whereas us just mentioning it, probably demonetized.
Yeah, and it is all about...
Here's a scholarly article about a thing, demonetized.
They talk about the moderators themselves admitting, they're like, yeah, it has nothing to do with protecting the user. It was never... They didn't even pretend that it was about that.
It's about making money.
About the advertisers. Make the advertisers comfortable. And it turns out that the advertisers are a lot more comfortable with Logan Paul because he brings the clicks. Sad, but that's the world we live in, isn't it?
It's hard to imagine that our channel is too controversial for, you know, some of the big advertisers like Dollar Shave Club or like the Sasquatch soap people or...
Well, I imagine it's not so much that alone, but it's just like, this channel doesn't... A lot of these people are smart enough not to click on these ads. Plus, they said something that we can pretend it's about that, so let's just brush them to the side. Maybe if you guys would buy some Dollar Shave Club. Come on. All right, moving on to AI and robot. This is an interesting story because I remember a couple of years ago, this was in the news every week, and it was always this little bit of excitement. It's like, oh, mysterious signals from space? What could it be? Well, we never really figured it out, but now we're getting a couple of new answers thanks to artificial intelligence.
It's mysterious ancient radio signals keep pelting Earth. Astronomers designed an AI to hunt them down. So these are fast radio bursts. We don't know what in nature causes them, and we're pretty sure that they're not related to like an explosion or a collision of like two black holes or something like that. Where they appear in the night sky it doesn't appear to be super predictable, but this AI has actually helped us catch, you know, in the first month it was operating, it caught what, 6 or 7 fast radio bursts according to the article.
Something, and we'd only seen like that many in ever so many years.
Yeah.
It's not a matter of catching them because they're constantly hitting our satellites, but the dishes are so powerful that the magnitude of the data that's coming into them, like, we can't record it all, conceivably. So you're actually looking at little tiny parts of the sky at a given time. What this AI does is it identifies the radio burst fast enough to tell the satellite, hey, pay close attention right here for the next few seconds. And then we catch more and more of these.
Neat.
So.
Still don't know why they're happening, but hey.
And if we ever do, maybe that's the end of civilization.
Wouldn't that be cool if it turns out that it's, you know, Alpha Centauri's version of I Love Lucy? Like, we just catch a little blip of it just because things are... Like, how cool would that be if you discover that we're not alone in the universe by finding an alien race's sitcoms?
That might be the darkest timeline for real. It might be worse than an invasion timeline. Because it's like there's life out there, but they're as bad as us. If you like to drink the alcohol, which we don't, like I said, we aspied out of that wedding so fast, we didn't even enjoy any of the spirits. But if you like it, you have to be worried about people not giving you what you expect that you're paying for. Because some of that stuff gets really expensive.
Yeah.
So what do you do? They've proven time after time that these sommeliers don't know what the hell they're talking about. In a blind taste test, they can't tell the Boone's Farm from the, like, 30-year-old. So... What do you do? Well, it's technology to the rescue, as usual.
Scientists have developed an artificial tongue to detect fake whiskeys. The technology can also be used to identify poisons, as well as to monitor rivers. Neat.
So it's like it reacts to light reflecting off of these little cells. And it's like transistor size, like, you know, 100, like, I think, how many 100,000 or million were on it? It's a bunch. And some of them are treated with chemicals. And so what happens is you get this distinct snapshot of light hitting it based on what it's coated with. And they actually took some similar, like the same brand, but different years, scotch and whiskey and stuff. And sure enough, they could get a consistent snapshot, but it was different with every one of them.
Neat. So they're just going to feed all that data to an AI now and be like, taste this. Is it any good? It's like, yeah. No, this is terrible.
So that is... pretty cool. I imagine that, like, restaurants and bars and stuff, I wonder how expensive this would be.
That would be kind of a cool gimmick. You go to a high-end restaurant, and it's like, let's wheel out the tasting robot. It's like, yeah, look, you're going to enjoy this a lot more because the tasting robot says that this is the best you can get.
Yeah, you pop the cork out and just give the robot the cork, and it prints out a number. And everybody's like, oh, yeah. And, of course, you just make the robot cheat. Well, we talked about this story in the past. I don't remember what the context was, but Technology Review, they revisited it here, and it is amazing that China, I think the context was the AI was seeing if they were paying attention. Remember that?
Yeah, yeah. Monitoring their brainwaves.
Which, in that context, it was like, oh, this is dystopian and terrifying. But now we see it from this point of view, and this is very positive.
China has started a grand experiment in AI education. It could reshape how the world learns. So there's a case study of one here, but there was a kid who was struggling in math or falling behind in math. So the AI looked at exactly how they were struggling and engaged the kid with specific exercises and specific things to try to help them understand. And there were no miracles. It took, you know, the better part of a year of hard work, but they moved from, like, what was it, like 60% to 85%. In school.
It might have been worse than 60, but it was a huge increase. But it
took a long time.
Well, but, you know, I mean, over the course of an education.
Yeah.
Who cares? So, and this is called Squirrel AI, and it's this program. And the interesting thing about it is it's kind of a small classroom size rather than the traditional, especially in a place as populous as China, like these huge classrooms. But the teachers aren't lecturing. They're just also staring at a laptop. And, like, they have the diagnostics that's monitoring what the kids are doing through the AI. So it's a totally different kind of education. But it seems to be working with these Chinese kids.
That's really cool. Although, I wonder how much of it is, oh, you aren't paying attention. Let me issue a small electric shock to get you to pay attention again.
Yeah, there is. I mean, you think about when, like, laptops were issued for the first time in schools, it was after our time, but and I thought to myself, well, that nobody's going to pay attention. Are you giving them an internet connection? I mean, do you know what that? And it sort of does counteract that whole thing. It's like, okay, we're giving you the ability, we're giving you the world's knowledge here. You must use it. You don't have a choice. And that seems to be the trick.
I would say that there was definitely a component of our education that was your alternatives are you can stare at a white wall in a room with white walls, a white floor, and a white ceiling. There is nothing in here. You can literally just stare off into space, or you can learn this thing from the book. Those are your options. There's nothing else.
See, you're thinking inside of a window, and so many students didn't. And that's where that thing failed. Is like, you know what? I could option three, bitch. I could carve my name into this thing. And that's what they would do.
Yeah.
You know, I could snort coke right here at the desk if I wanted to. Or whatever. Make some babies. And so, you know, this, I suppose, would prevent that as well, because you have to be constantly engaged to the AI. Interesting. I wonder if it'll have any impact on self-teaching later in life, though. Right,
you have to have the AI. It's like, how am I going to learn?
You've had that crutch. Now, they could, if Squirrel AI is smart, they could just roll that out into a consumer product right after you get out of school. It's like, continue to learn. Oh, now you have this job? Let me teach you about that job, Squirrel AI.
I want to see an AI that somehow, like, imparts that sense of wonder. Because a lot, at least some of the junior people that, you know, that we work with on junior things, they have no sense of wonder. They seem to have no sense of wonder. And it's like, is this, look at this amazing thing that has been built before you. And they're just like, whatever.
Yeah.
We need that. The AI needs to.
I don't think you can put that in AI form.
You need to be as amazed as if we traveled back in time and showed like a caveman, like a laptop. It's like, you need to be that level of blown away.
I think, some of that, though, comes, it's sort of self-fulfilling, right? Or it's, I don't know what the word for it is, but, you know, like, it feeds itself where, okay, I have this phone, right? Everybody's got one. It's not unusual. But then you learn it's like, oh, okay, what makes this phone work? Wait a minute. You tell me that there's a billion tiny switches in a tiny little... What are you telling... And then it's like, you know, your mind's blown. But if you never get past that first hurdle of these are normal and everybody has these, then...
It's like fire. It's like you learn to appreciate fire. It's like you don't really appreciate fire until you're freezing to death on that first camping trip.
So you're saying we should throw our children into the wild like the Spartans so that they'll appreciate technology.
It certainly worked for me. I mean, I don't know.
I'll tell you, I'm still appreciating my central air.
After oh, yeah, going your central air died.
3 or 4 days without it. Oh, it was brutal. So I'm still in that wonderment state. It's like, oh, it's so cool in here and wonderful. Life could be so much worse. Trains. Trains seem like perhaps the simplest self-driving of all the vehicles. And yet... Until now, it doesn't seem like we've really explored it.
Autonomous trains are ready to roll. So, yeah, these trains don't require any human intervention. They go on a track, and they're able to deal with obstacles and trees in the track and all sorts of fun things.
They don't really have... Like, there's no way in pictures to illustrate self-driving train, because it looks just like a regular train.
There can be optionally a conductor on board to monitor things. They can also be monitored remotely.
Well... Here's the thing that it boils down to, and Fortune explores it, but I think they like kind of glossed over it because they didn't want to anger people. But the biggest hurdle to this appears to be the unions, because the unions see the writing on the wall. Like, oh, hey, every job on that train except for serving meals and drinks, we don't need you.
Yeah,
we could live without you, because they've already got autonomous systems for slowing down. Like those Japanese bullet trains that can come to a complete stop without turning over a glass of wine.
Yeah.
And so it's like, yeah, those systems exist. You just have to bolt them on. And to do that, you are going to be just gutting that industry when it comes to employment.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't go into any engineering programs, train engineering. Engineering the AI that runs the train, do that, but don't go into the... The other one.
Literally everything is like technology plus something else these days.
Now, when you talk about vehicles that are ready for self-driving, I would put trains near the top for sure.
Because there's a track. It doesn't really have to turn all that much. It really just has to regulate speed to make sure that you're traveling at a safe speed. You can go faster in straight stretches, and now, you can slow down in curves. How hard is that?
Near the bottom, especially for wheeled vehicles... I think I'd put the bike.
New Scientist has the self-riding bicycle follows you around while you walk. So if you need to hop off your bicycle, yeah, it's just on two wheels and it'll just follow you around. Because it's not hauling you around, it doesn't really need very much battery power to do this. So, neat.
I mean, what is the use case?
The population density is so high that you can't safely ride your bicycle, but... You know, when you get out of town, you've got to ride your bicycle back to the farm or the house or whatever. So mm-hmm. It has to follow you around in the city.
I guess. How do you keep it from being stolen while it's following?
Well, I mean, you have to live somewhere that is a really high population density but has an out-of-control police force. So I'm guessing this is China?
I don't know if they put it into use anywhere, but it is cool. Now, we have seen people make attempts at self-driving motorcycles.
Yeah.
With varying degrees of success. So, I guess this is a reasonable next step in that.
Does this finally mean that we have the technology that I could build R2-D2 and have R2-D2 follow me around, but then also ride R2-D2 like a unicycle whenever, you know, I need that out-of-city transportation?
That would be a really uncomfortable ride, don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to have, like, install a seat or something. And finally... In the robot section, and this is the last story we have today. This is not the first time that we have talked about this robot. I don't know if he had a name the first time we talked about
him. He was not named Marty. He was named something else.
We now know, because he's at, I think this place is called like Quick Mart, or no, Stop and Shop. But because he is in a mart, I guess, you know, he will be Marty.
Marty, the grocery store robot, is a glimpse into our hellish future. I don't know why they hyphenated hellish.
That is interesting, isn't it? So there he is. There's Marty. We've talked about him in the past. He's got these googly eyes. That's really his only human feature. And he actually drives forward this way, so like these two evil robot eyes are the actual eyes, I think. Or it's probably just lights. Anyway, Marty, what does he do? Because we think about, well, he's known as a spill robot. So when I say spill robot, of course, you've read the story. What's the first thing that comes into your mind?
Deft robot is going to run through the aisles and make sure people aren't stealing.
Well, no, I would think that he's going to clean up spills.
Oh, okay.
But he doesn't do that.
No. He just lets somebody know to come clean it up.
Which is, and it's kind of hilarious. You can watch, there's a couple of tweets that people have recorded. But here's the thing about Marty is he is meticulous when it comes to identifying a spill. So they have mentioned a bottle cap will set Marty off. And when he finds,
he's triggered by a bottle cap.
When those blue lights, they turn yellow and start blinking, and then he starts like audibly like, caution, caution, there's a spill. Someone found one piece of cilantro. Marty lost his shit. So a lot of the shoppers have experienced or expressed uncomfortable, you know, like Marty's following them and they don't like it, or they don't, if they're in an aisle and Marty starts down the aisle, that like Krista, they'll just escape and come back later when Marty's not there. So it's really showing that people are not super comfortable with our robot overlords.
Well, no, if people are reacting to Marty, then, you know, it's only a matter of time before the behavioral science people are turned loose with that, and these robots are going to be used to herd people to like the name brand aisles. Like the name brands will pay extra to have the robots herd people, and it's like, no, are you considering the off-brand Cheerios? No, I'm sorry. There's a spill in this aisle. You need to go to the other aisle.
Yeah. Now, they do mention that children, on the other hand, seem to love Marty.
Oh, well.
So it could be that, you know, going forward, people come to love the robots. Like us, you know, we're not used to them, so we just trust them. But going forward, children will grow up with them and then be totally accepting of Marty and his whatever comes of him.
All right. That's it for this episode. We'll see you tomorrow with lots of business news.
All business all the time tomorrow.